Hey guys, Phil from Trail Talk here, and welcome to the Trail Talk Live podcast. So if you want to check out just the audio version of this, head over to Spotify. I'll put the link in the description for that. So if you're in the car or anything like that and you don't want to put a YouTube video on, obviously you don't want to distract yourself, then definitely head over there and then you'll be able to listen to the audio only version. But on this podcast, we'll talk news, so new bikes and all that kind of stuff like that, and hopefully answer some of your guys' questions as well. So if you have a question, head over to the YouTube. We're on the YouTube now, and then put a question there, so in the comments there, and then I'll get around to answering it in the next podcast. So good questions and all that kind of stuff like that. Not is certain bike better than that? We obviously want to get a bit more of a discussion going, but I'm always happy to answer those questions in my other videos and all that kind of stuff too. So I hope you guys enjoy this week's podcast. So I finally got around to starting a proper podcast. I know the audio probably won't be perfect to start with, still got my lav mic, but we'll definitely look to be getting a proper microphone soon. But I also want to say thank you for a million views. We've got a million views on the channels now, so that's awesome to see, so absolutely stoked with that. But enough of that kind of stuff like that, let's get into the more audio stuff, and then if you're on YouTube, I'll put some photos of the stuff that we're talking up about as well, so if you want to follow a bit more on there. So jumping right into the news to start with, we saw Commonsile release a lot of their new bikes. So these bikes are absolutely huge. So if you're definitely more of an advanced rider, if you're looking for something to go really fast, then definitely the bike for you. It's going to take a bit more body language to get these bikes to do what you really want to do. But yeah, they're super, super long. So let's get into a bit more of the details. So as I said, they are big bikes, but if you do want to size down, you can definitely do that as well. So the reach on the size large of most of the bikes, the reach of the size medium on most of the bikes are what a normal large would be. So for instance, the reach on my Marin Alpine Trail is 465, and on the Meta TR, the medium is a reach of 465. So getting into the details, so starting with the Meta TR, you've got a whopping reach of 490 millimeters. So that's absolutely ridiculously long. You've got a super, super steep seat angle as well. So it's 78.6 degrees. So really, really steep, which is going to suit a lot more of those kind of steeper climbs. So it's definitely going to be more of a bike that's going to long climb to the top and then descend on the way down. And that's kind of matched with a 64.5 degree head angle. So all that together, you've got a whopping wheelbase of 1,256 millimeters on this bad boy. So that's a lot longer than most enduro bikes out there. So that's awesome to see, especially if you are a faster rider. So yeah, it's going to suit really fast trails as well as more advanced riders. They're going to be a bit stronger, that can handle a longer wheelbase. But as I said, if you're a normal rider, you can size down and it would feel pretty natural for most people. So moving on to the Meta AM, no surprise here, it's pretty big as well. So pretty much the same geo, just 5 degrees longer in the reach, and then you've got a 1 degree slacker head angle. So pretty similar intentions here. Then you've also got some really good builds on these bikes too. So absolutely killer spec. I really like Commonsile. They offer what I like in a bike. So I usually just like a nice burly alloy build and then some really good spec for money. So save a bit of money on the frame and get that kind of alloy stuff, and then you can get absolutely killer spec for the money. So awesome spec for these bikes, and they're really built to, I guess, be privateer bikes. So if you're racing or you just want a bike that's just gonna not let you down and be absolutely burly and got some great spec for the money, they're definitely worth checking out. So there was also a few other bikes that they had that came out. There was the Meta Hardtail AM, I think. That was a really good bike too. Not the most progressive bike in terms of a hardtail, but it was interesting to see. It's pretty good value for money, so it's definitely worth checking out too. And then there was also the Clash as well, which is shares pretty much the same geometry as these bikes, so super long, a bit longer than the old one, which is interesting for a more free ride style bike, but it can also double as a enduro bike for 27.5 inch wheel fans. So those other two bikes, the Meta TR as well as the Meta AM, they're both 29ers. And it was interesting to see they've gone to the linkage actuated single pivot like on the other bikes. Kind of a bit of a different layout in terms of where the pivots are, but it's still a linkage actuated single pivot. And then it's gone away from the split pivot. So yeah, it's a single pivot now. So that's really interesting to see. But overall, these bikes look absolutely awesome. If you're looking for something that's really fast and you've got nice fast open trails or fast technical trails, it's definitely going to suit those kind of trails very, very well. So next up in the news, we had a kind of a weird one this week. It was the issue with Calibre and Go Outdoors kind of together, but go into it a bit more. So if you don't know, Calibre is a UK based brand, offer really great value for money bikes. So the Boss Nut kind of built a cult following because it was kind of under that £1,000 mark, and They had the ride to scheme work, which was under £1,000 and you get subsidized for the bike. And a lot of people took this up and they got a dual suspension bike they could ride on the trails on the weekend and commute to work in the week. I don't know if many people were commuting to work, but you could definitely take advantage of that scheme and get a pretty good value for money mountain bike. They also have the Century Enduro bike as well, which is a really good bike too. I'll stop saying really so much. I've just realized I've caught myself. I'm saying really, and again, it's going to be definitely and really. It's going to be all over again like my old videos. But they also have the Century, which is a good enduro bike. I almost said really again. So it's a good enduro bike, really long. It's going to be kind of, again, similar to the common styles. It's going to be really good for those privateers out there. Had good geometry that was going to suit that kind of EWS level paces in those kind of races. And then it had great spec for the money too. And it was actually, I think it was raced in the EWS last year as well by one athlete. So yeah, it was awesome to see. But here was the situation. So they were bought out, I think it was in 2016 by JD Sports. So I think they're a big kind of group over in the UK. And that was Go Outdoors. And I think Calibre's kind of attached to that. Anyway, 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago or a week ago, they went into administration. And then 2 days later, the same company that were with before. So in 2 days, they went into administration with that company. And then 2 days later, JD Sports bought them back again. So it was really interesting. It was an interesting announcement. I don't know in terms of finances if that's something's dodgy going on there, but I'd have to look into all that kind of stuff like that. But hopefully one of you guys in the comments might be able to fill me in with that kind of stuff. But it was an interesting turn of events, but all in all, it's good to have Calibre back in the market, not just because they're great value bikes, but they kind of push the market to produce better value products, and that's kind of what we all want. So it's awesome to see that they're sticking around. So the next bit of news, we have the new Specialized Epic and Epic Evo. So yeah, this was an interesting move by Specialized, and they're going super progressive with their bikes now, especially starting with the Enduro. It's absolutely awesome to see that they're getting more capable bikes out there. And it, because it is a mass consumer brand, it's going to be a lot more people on those kind of more progressive bikes, which is interesting to see as well. So as I said, going to be a pretty progressive bike. So for an XE machine, it's pretty out there. So there's the Evo, which is the kind of more capable version with 110 millimeters of rear travel compared to the 100 on the normal Epic. That has a 66.5 degree angle, so pretty crazy for a cross country. It's kind of, I guess, more of a cross country trail bike, which is down country is what most people are kind of calling it these days. But that would be on the more XE end of down country. Then there's also 67.5 degree head angle on the regular Epic. So these are going to be some pretty capable XE bikes, and it's kind of reflective of what XE tracks kind of coming to be. And then you've also got more of those marathon races as well that incorporate some more trail stuff too. So it's good to see these bikes be a bit more capable, and having a slightly slacker head angle, as long as you've got your setup properly, it shouldn't compromise the climbing abilities too much. But what's really crazy is the frame weight. So you're getting insane frame weights on these bikes. So the Epic Evo is actually lighter because it doesn't have the brain system. So what the brain does, it kind of senses impacts. I think on the front wheel there might be a sensor, or it's on the rear wheel, I can't remember. Because I think it would make sense being on the front wheel because then it pre-detects the impact, but I don't know if it was on the front or the rear. But anyway, the brain is on the rear, but I don't know about that sensor. But essentially it senses an impact coming, and then it changes the compression tune of the shock. So if it's on the flat stuff, kind of firmer compression tune, so it pedals a bit better. And then when you start to hit more chunky stuff, then the shock opens up and you start to use a bit more travel. So yeah, it's awesome to see. But yeah, for the Evo, it's 1,659 grams for a dual suspension bike, which is absolutely ludicrous. And then, as I said, the Epic, the normal one, is just a bit heavier because of that brain, and that's 1,869 grams. And that's for the S-Works frame. So if you're, I think it was 18 grand Australian dollars, which is baffles me at how expensive that bike is. But again, people are going to be getting these bikes, they've probably got Moolah or their sponsored riders. But it's also interesting to know that the non-S-Works frames are only 100 grams heavier, so not too much heavier. So that should be pretty good. If you're looking for a real fast XE bike, I think the entry-level one for Australia was around 6,807K, which is very expensive, don't get me wrong. But if you're an XE professional XE racer, then might be considered good value. But it was kind of weird. One last thing that I did notice on the bikes, the Evo that has the more aggressive bike, it's actually got a shorter reach, and that kind of comes down to because it has a slacker seat angle as well. So yeah, it doesn't make sense to me that the more capable bike it's kind of held back in that regard. I feel that it's a bit counterintuitive. You want a slightly longer reach on the more capable bike. So that was kind of weird, but yeah, interesting. On to the next thing, we've got another downcountry bike. The Revel Ranger also came out. And then we also had there's a Transition downcountry bike as well as the new Yeti. And we'll cover those next week because it kind of came out today and I wanted to get a bit more info on it before I kind of mentioned it too much on the podcast. But yeah, so we've got the Revel Ranger. So moving on from the Evo. And again, more of a real downcountry bike, but it's really good to see more of these kind of companies bringing out a more capable bike that you can do a lot more miles on. I think that's going to be appealing to a lot of people, but again, because it's Revel, it's going to be a fair bit more expensive like the Specialized. But what's really good about Revel bikes, they use the CBF platform. So it's actually a Canefield, it's licensed from Canefield. So really interesting stuff for that platform. It pedals very, very well. So this bike has 115 mm of rear suspension, 120 up front, 29 inch wheels, kind of makes sense for this category. Then you've got 67.5 degree head angle, as well as a 75.3 degree seat angle. So I feel like that should serve you pretty damn well if you're looking for it is a more expensive bike, but if you are looking for that kind of more capable trail XC bike, then it would be one that I'd definitely take a look at. So kind of continuing from what I said about the common style bikes earlier, having a really great value for money, Alloy Builds, YT jumped on the bandwagon. They've done this, I think, for a few last year's models, but they've brought out some really great spec alloy models. So you've got a really good spec decoy, so their e-bike, and then you've got the Capra. So as I said, I'm a huge fan of this. So with the YTs, you're getting a Fox 38 on those bikes. So awesome to see the Fox 38 starting to come out on a few new bikes. I think it's probably one of the first kind of to come out since the Fox stuff has come out. And then you've also got the new DHX2 coils on there as well. So yeah, I think that's awesome. And yeah, as I said, I'm not a huge fan of paying extra for carbon. I'd rather get better spec for money with alloy because I'm not too concerned about weight. Then next up, we had the launch of the Santa Cruz 5010. And watching this video, I've never been so hyped to purchase a bike that I'm not gonna buy. It was an awesome launch video. If you haven't watched it, I won't spoil it too much. Definitely, it's worth checking it out, but it really showed us what this bike's really about. So this 5010 has always been about fun, and I feel like that was really reflected in this video. The thing that was interesting, because the bike is all about fun, I thought they would have continued with the upper link driven shock, because they said a few years ago when they brought out the Bronson and 5010 that came out at the same time, the Bronson had the lower link driven and then the 5010 had the upper link driven VPP, and they said the main reason for that, they wanted to keep the 5010 more playful and lively. But it looks like that they've figured something out, or they're just kind of going for a more capable 5010. I'm sure it's still going to be a bit more of a fun bike, but it definitely is a little bit longer and slack than what it used to be, and it's got that lower link driven shock. But I still think it should be a very fun bike if you're looking for that kind of more fun bike, which is kind of a short travel trail bike in a 27.5. So if you're looking for that kind of stuff, then definitely check it out. And then move on to a bit of a rant here. So we saw the new SRAM stuff come out. So GX Eagle, X01 and XX1, they brought out some new group sets for those guys. So shock here, they went to a 520% gear range, just had to do the one up on Shimano, and it's now a 10 to 52 tooth drivetrain. So 12 speed, 10 to 52 tooth cassette. But here's what's so stupid. When Shimano had their 11 speed drivetrains, everyone complained that there was the 36 to the 46 tooth jump. It shifted terribly. It was just hard to get a good cadence between those two gears. The jump was too big. And SRAM has gone ahead and done the exact same thing with a 42 to 52 tooth jump, which absolutely baffles me. I don't know why they did it. I feel like it was just more of a marketing ploy, because it's pretty much almost virtually the same. They've just kind of changed the range and messed around with a few other things, but it doesn't seem like it's that special to me. It just seems like it was a marketing ploy to get some more drivetrains out there with a little bit extra range. It didn't seem like true development to me. But as I said, if you're a SRAM fan, you're gonna like it. If you're not, then you're not. Okay, so moving on to some questions now. And as I said, if you wanna submit a question to me answer on the podcast, head over to the YouTube and then put a question in the comments there, and then I'll get around to answering it in the next week's podcast. So especially kind of questions that are a bit more broader that we can kind of have a good discussion about, especially you guys can discuss as well. I think it would be definitely worthwhile. So send those through and then I'll get around to answering that in the next podcast. But the first question we've got is from Marty Richards. So he's a longtime viewer of the channel and always comments, so I really appreciate it. But he asked a very, very good question. And he asks, will 2021 bikes be more expensive than past years? So I'm going to tie this into kind of the state of the industry in general and kind of have a bit more of a discussion about that. But I think you kind of need to look at it in that broader picture to kind of get an understanding of what the prices will be like. So I've got some notes here. Sorry if I don't look at you, but we'll kind of go through these a bit more now. So as we've seen, prices have gone pretty crazy with the whole situation that's happened. It's a big fit, mainly down to supply and demand, but we'll go into it a bit more. So starting with when it all started, a lot of the factories closed down for a bit and that really messed with supply. So obviously when demands, we'll start with, we have low supply. I'll get into the demand later, but supply and demand. So we had really low supply and then everyone locked down and then we could only have very limited types of exercise we could do. And cycling was a huge one that everyone kind of took up because you're socially distancing yourself, getting out and going fit. And if you can go out, get fit in the bush, middle of nowhere and go for a ride, I think it was a really good solution for a lot of people. So a lot more people took up cycling. So demand was high and supply was low. But then we also saw a big interruption to the supply chain as well. So as you can imagine with bikes, there's a lot of parts that go into the bike. So you've got your derailleur, you've got your cassette, you've got your chain, you've got your pivot bolts, all that kind of stuff like that. Everything comes from a different factory. So for a bike to go right, you've got to have all the parts. So if you don't have all those parts, then you can't produce a bike. So not only was the factory shut down, then a lot of production kind of had to halt a bit as well in that regard because they just couldn't get all the parts. And then for periods of times when the whole situation grew in other countries where some other factories were, then that kind of shut that down. And then it happened with a few of those factories and then it made production even slower. So got absolutely crazy. But essentially, right now we've got very low supply of bikes and demand super, super high. So what does that happen usually? What happens when that happens? You get really high prices. So bike shops, they didn't have a lot of bikes and they could sell those bikes at a higher price because they kind of had to because there was limited supply and they could get away with it. And as a business, you would probably do the same. But so as you can understand, a lot of these bikes pretty much sold out now. So you're probably not going to see a lot of the bikes kind of start to be in higher stock towards the end of the year. And we're going to start seeing a bit more of the 2021 bikes coming out. So you're not going to see a huge restock of 2020 bikes. It's going to be mainly new bikes for 2021. And they should be coming around September, October, towards the end of the year. So let's move into the situation. Will they be more expensive? And will demand stay high? So personally, I feel like demand's probably going to stay high for bikes, mainly because Christmas time is the busiest time for bike shops in the year. When I used to work in a bike shop, probably 3/4 of the profit was coming from those kind of Christmas months, so November, October, if not more profits. It was ridiculous. That kind of time was so busy, and then halfway through the year might actually be losing money. So I won't go too much into that, but you can imagine it's the busiest time of the year for a bike shop. Presents for everyone, everyone's getting bikes and all that kind of stuff for Christmas. It's a Christmas classic. But so I still feel like demand's going to be high in that regard. Number two, there's a lot of people that have pre-ordered bikes from when it was obviously demand was super, super high. And then the last thing you've got, I think as a sport, it's grown massively because of this situation. And I think a lot more people are going to stay with the sport and a lot more people are going to get into it. Their friends are getting into it. And it just makes sense. It's a really good way to socially distance and it's a fun sport to kind of get into. So I still think demand's going to be pretty high. So my gut says prices are still going to be pretty high until I guess the supply can really keep up with this new demand. But saying that, the bike industry is very, very competitive and everyone kind of wants to stay on top. But as an industry, I feel like prices are just going to be a little bit more. The RRP might stay the same, but I feel like a lot of bike shops will probably keep their prices a little bit higher just to kind of get a bit more in terms of get a bit more cash. But I feel like it's just to kind of stay on top of the supply and kind of manage things that way. But I still think bikes are going to sell out. People are happy to pay the extra bit of money at the moment. So yeah, I feel like they might be a little bit more expensive than last year. So moving on to, I hope that answered your question. Bit complicated, but I think it makes sense. So the next question comes from Jack Charlesworth. And this is a question I get asked all the time, mainly because I didn't do a buyer's guide for hard towels last year. I was planning on doing it, but by the time that I got around finishing the other buyer's guides, it was like, oh, it's the next year and some other people had done it. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I might wait till the next year, but I'll kind of cover what I think my best hard towels are here. So his question is, what is the best beginner hard towel under $1,000? So just kind of so we're all on an even playing field, I'll say that's $1,000 US because that's going to be probably the most common one. And then that's $1,500 Australian and £800. So yeah, so as I said, I get asked this question a fair bit, and there's kind of two ways that you can go with this. So there's, when I was always working in a bike shop, so tying it back to that, if you haven't watched the working in a bike shop skit, definitely check that out as well. It's on the channel, but I thought that was funny. But yeah, so when people came in, there was obviously people that were going to take it seriously and probably progress in the sport a fair bit. So they were happy to probably spend a little bit more. And then there's people that want to start off as cheap as they can, but get as capable bike as they can. But they kind of know that they'll have to probably upgrade that bike in a year. So there's two ways you can kind of go with it. The cheapest, most capable bike that you can, you're probably not going to want to upgrade it because it's not worth your money, especially might have a straight steer and all that kind of stuff like that. And then the next one, you want a really capable bike that you can really upgrade and build on. You're going to be keeping it for a few years and you know you're going to be beating the hell out of it. So you want a bike that can kind of handle proper trails straight from the get-go and you can upgrade small things as you go. So that's kind of like my two trains of thought. So you just kind of need to figure out what your actual budget is and be realistic. And then kind of as you go, if you've got kind of that more expensive end, as you go, you can upgrade it. But if you really only have a small amount of money that you can kind of work with, then it's better off just to get something cheap and then save up over the next year for a more capable bike. So on that kind of more cheaper end, we're not too concerned about having a straight steer, a quick release and all that kind of stuff like that. And two bikes really stand out for me. So the first is the Marin Bobcat Trail. And this bike probably has the best geometry in the category of a more affordable bike. So it does have a straight steerer and quick release dropouts, but it is a really capable, the geometry is really, really capable. And the frame, it's a pretty strong frame. It's going to be pretty lightweight given the price as well. So you've got a 67 degree head angle, which is really good on these bikes. You'll find that a lot more of these entry-level hardtails are tailored more towards XC, where the Bobcat Trail is more tailored towards that trail segment. So it will be a bit more capable and give a lot more confidence to people entering the sport as opposed to a more twitchy, short cross-country bike. So you've got that 67 degree head angle. You've got a 74.5 degree seat angle, which is good too. It's also, should note as well with hardtails, because the fork's the only part that sags, your seat angle will get a little bit steeper when you're climbing on these bikes. So the 74.5 is static, so you might get a little bit steeper when you're on the bike as well. And then the reach is 465. As I said, when it sags, it's going to get a little bit longer with the reach as well, because that's how it works. So that's a really great bike. Then moving on to the Vetus Nucleus. And this is one hardtail of the year in its price category so many years in a row. It's an absolute banger of a bike for the money. So again, 67 degree head angle, 450 millimeter reach, so a bit shorter on the size large. And that's in the 29er version. But what's crazy on this bike is the spec that you're getting for the money. So you also do get a tapered head tube, and then you've got an air fork on it as well. So that's absolutely really impressive with this bike. And again, I wouldn't probably upgrade this bike if I got it, but you've got that air fork in there with the tapered steer too. So it kind of, you're going to have a bit more stable front end, which is going to give you a bit more confidence. And it's just going to be more composed over the rough stuff, which is really good on these entry-level bikes. So now moving on to bikes that we can kind of upgrade a bit. I'll go through a few bikes here as well. So again, sorry if I'm not looking too much, but then we want all the goodies on these bikes. So we want the tapered head tube, we want through axles instead of quick releases, we want decent geometry, we want all those bells and whistles on these bikes, and preferably tubeless ready as well. So yeah, and dropper post compatibility, that's a huge one too. So starting with the Marin San Quentin, and this is a true kind of hardcore hardtail. So if you're looking for a more capable hardtail, definitely not on the XE spectrum, but it still is going to be pretty efficient compared to more dual suspension bikes with this geometry, but it is something to note. So you've got a 65 degree head angle, so that's absolutely awesome. Super steep seat angle at 75 degrees as well, and then you've got a generous reach at 464 millimeters too. So that's going to be an awesome bike. So if you're looking for something a bit more capable, I definitely check that one out. And it comes in three different models as well to suit all your price points too. So check that one out if you're looking for a really capable bike to start on. The next is the Vitus Sentier, which has probably the best spec for money out of any bike I've seen at this price point. So you get air fork, trail ready. You've got some really good tires on there. You've got, which is tubeless as well. You've got air fork, one by drivetrain. And that's got some good modern trail geometry in there as well. So 66.5 degree head angle in the 29er, which is awesome to see. My other pick, main pick, so with these three, these are my three main picks, and then we'll go into a few more a bit later. But this is probably my favorite. I really like the look on this frame. So it's the Ragley Big Owl. So what I like, you've got really good tires that are tubeless ready, and the rims are tubeless too. So 3C Max Terra DHF and DHR, awesome tires. One by drivetrain, you got a RockShox Recon, which is 140 millimeters, which is awesome to see. So it's going to be really capable for you. And the GA's dial too, 65.5 degree head angle, 75 seat angle, and then you've also got a 460 millimeter large on the size large. So yeah, awesome bike. So if you're looking for a more capable hardtail, check those ones out. And they're great platforms to build on if you're going to be riding it for a couple of years. So. And another thing that's good on all these bikes, the cockpits and all that kind of stuff styled too. So wide bars, short stem, all that kind of stuff. And then we've got some other bikes too. So you've got some options from Diamondback. They're a little bit shorter in terms of reach, but they're great options if you're looking for something cool. Then from REI in the US, REI, you've got the Co-op Dirt. I think the 2.1 is where they start with the through axles. Check that one out. That was absolutely killer spec. And then it's decently long in the reach too. And then the Nuke Proof Spout's always a great option too. And there's a few more out there, but those are kind of the main ones that I kind of recommend in these kind of price points. So yeah, they're bikes that you can really progress on and build into mountain biking. They aren't going to really let you down. So that's pretty much it for me. As I said earlier, if you do want to just listen to the audio version, I'll put the link to Spotify in the description, and that way you can just listen to the podcast in the car or something like that. Or if you're in the gym or any kind of thing like that, if you want to have a listen without watching the video. And then also, if you have any questions, leave them in the questions on the YouTube channel, and I'll get around to answering those for the next podcast. And that's pretty much it for me for this week. So hope you guys enjoy the podcast. See ya.